All right, thanks, everybody. You can be seated. We're here for our second case of the morning, Peter Gregory Kane versus the people. May I have any favor of your attention, please? Thank you. And for the people?
Michael Mellon, number 9103.
Thanks. This case is set for 30 minutes. That means each side has 15 minutes. You'll need to keep track of your own time, if you would, please. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am here today asking the court to reverse Mr. Kane's conviction for two reasons. As an initial matter, I'm asking the court to find that the rules of statutory construction dictate that the results of a preliminary breath test may not be presented to a jury for any purpose. In the alternative, even if this court is to find that under certain circumstances the results of a preliminary breath test may become admissible under certain circumstances, those circumstances do not present themselves in this case. The matter before the court today involves a matter of statutory interpretation. I think more broadly, we are considering a matter of the admissibility of evidence. And as I discussed in my briefing, there are typically two reasons that we do not allow evidence to be presented to a jury. Two types of evidence. One type of evidence is evidence where the evidence itself may be good evidence, however, the manner in which it was obtained or collected or violated some right or was faulty in some manner. In those circumstances, we don't allow the party that obtained the evidence to present that evidence to the jury as a sort of sanction for violating the right of, for example, the defendant. The most obvious example would be evidence seized in violation of the defendant's, you know, Fourth Amendment right against the illegal search and seizure. On the other side, we have evidence that may be obtained properly. However, there's something about the evidence itself that makes it not admissible. There's something wrong with the evidence. There's something not reliable about the evidence. And in those circumstances, we also don't allow that evidence to be presented to a jury under any circumstances, because there is nothing that can be done to fix whatever's wrong with the evidence.
I just want to be clear on those things. The actual numbers, though, that were registered on this preliminary test aren't an issue here, right? I mean, it's just this opening the door issue about whether or not the people can respond by some sort of evidence that shows that your client was drinking.
That's correct.
Okay, so you're trying to make an absolute privilege out of this statute, basically.
That's correct. And I think with the sort of admissibility framework in mind, then we can turn to the language of the statute, and following the rules of statutory construction, I think it becomes a relatively simple task of looking at the language of the statute. The legislature was very clear in the statute that's at issue that the results of a preliminary breath test are not admissible in any court action, and they do carve out one very narrow exception. They do take the extra step of providing that in that one narrow exception, that one exception must be done outside the presence of a jury. I think that's interesting because I think everyone is familiar with the fact that probable cause determinations don't typically take place in front of a jury, and yet the legislature took the extra step of providing that where the PDT results are going to be admitted to show probable cause, that still must be done outside the presence of a jury. And they took, you know, they took the step to note that in the statute.
Can a judge rely on unreliable evidence any more than a jury? But I take it you were starting your split here, your dichotomy was, this falls into the category of something that's totally unreliable.
That's correct.
Apparently it's reliable enough, though, to find probable cause.
It is reliable enough, the legislature at least has determined that the results are reliable enough to show to use as one piece of evidence that may determine probable cause. How I think in a situation where a judge is acting as a fact finder, for example, in a court trial, if someone waives the right to a jury trial, I don't believe that would be proper either. I don't believe under any circumstances that it would be proper to provide these results to the fact finder, where the judge is acting as the arbiter of the law, for example, in a motions hearing. I think the legislature at least has provided that's appropriate.
So it's not really a question of the jury, it's a question of what this kind of evidence is reliable enough to prove.
It is. Well, I think that was the determination in crafting the statute originally. I think the position that we're in now is relying on the language of the statute, where the legislature has made their intentions pretty clear by providing that these results are not admissible in any court action, except for the one exception outlined in the statute.
Mr. Kritchenberg, could I ask, can you define the word results in the statute? Is it the number, or is it just the fact that there was a positive, or both?
I think the word results means whatever the preliminary screening device output, and I can tell the court, it's going, in every circumstance, it's going to provide one of three results. It's going to provide a positive result with a number, it will provide a negative result, which would show 0.000, or it's going to show an error message. I think any of those positive, negative numbers, zero, error, those are all results. And I would draw the court's attention actually to the district attorney's answer brief, because they point out in Colorado Revised Statute 1813.122, which is the statute that defines the offense of a minor in possession or consumption of alcohol. And the reason I point to that statute is because in that statute, particularly in subsection 11, the legislature provided that the results of any alcohol test may be admissible, but they specifically use the phrase qualitative results. And so in that statute, they chose to use the phrase qualitative results, which I think can be inferred to mean the specific number of the results. Whereas in the statute that's at issue before the court today, they didn't use that same phrase. They just used the word results, which I think implies a broader application.
And if my review of everything indicates that the judge allowed just the fact that it was positive but not the number, correct?
That was the
ruling. All right, and is it your position that still is introducing the results of the test?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And I think the interpretation of the statute in this manner is consistent with ways that other states have interpreted their statutes. The case that I would rely on the most would be People versus Bass, the Illinois case, where the court in that case looked at the language of the statute, and that's as far as they went. And they said the language of the statute is clear. Had the legislature wanted these results to be admissible, they would have put it in the statute. And there's an interesting distinction between the Illinois statute and our statute, because in the Illinois statute, the statute is silent as to whether they are admissible for impeachment purposes or admissible at all to a jury. Our legislature, on the other hand, went the extra step and it filled in the blank where the Illinois legislature was silent. Our legislature spoke, and they said these results are not admissible in any court action. So I think that the reason of People versus Bass is instructive and persuasive here because of the similarities in the statutes, and then the fact that our legislature went one step further and wasn't just silent but actually spoke and said that these results are not admissible. As opposed to the statute that was at issue in the Michigan case that the trial court relied on here, the Michigan statute provides that these results, PBT results, are not admissible except in a prosecution for a drinking and driving offense. In other words, what the Michigan legislature has decided is that where intoxication is actually a substantive element of the offense, then these results can come in. And so the Michigan statute is actually completely opposite from the Colorado statute. Therefore, I don't think that the case relied on by the trial court is particularly instructive because it's interpreting a completely different statute.
Did the court admit the document, the results?
In the
As a matter of evidence here in this case?
No. The court ruled that had Mr. Cain presented his own testimony that he had not been drinking that night, that would then open the door to the positive result of the preliminary breath test. Based on that, Mr. Cain chose not to testify.
And so, counsel, thinking about this in the context of impeachment, keeping in mind that the statute is, even as you can see, the legislature has deemed that these results are admissible, at least in some contexts. Why is it not appropriate when the defendant clearly opens the door by claiming that he hasn't consumed alcohol to allow, as rebuttal evidence, the prosecution to come back, it was, introduce this evidence, in fact, he took a test?
Really, for two reasons. And I think the underlying reason is because of the reliability of these tests.
And assuming even the concerns about unreliability, why isn't that really sort of taken care of through vigorous cross-examination and the limiting instruction that the trial court offered here? Why aren't those reliability concerns really handled in that manner?
Because ultimately, I think the legislature here has made the decision that these tests are not admissible. And I guess the reason I said that the underlying reason is the reliability is because I think that's what went into the legislature's decision to craft the statute in this manner. And they made their decision pretty clear, I think, by the language of the statute. Ultimately, a defendant, by presenting testimony, as was offered in this case, is responding to the prosecution, responding to the charges. And as I talked about in my brief, if any time a defendant is going to testify in the DUI trial that he had not been drinking, effectively almost every single DUI trial we're going to be seeing the results of these preliminary breath tests. The legislature, I think, has spoken very clearly that that's not what we're supposed to be doing. Reserve a couple of minutes, but I want to speak briefly about ultimately if the court decides that there are certain circumstances that may open the door to these PBT results. I don't think those circumstances exist in this case. And I think a review of cases from other states where they have ruled that the door had been opened is instructive, because in those cases, and specifically I'm talking about the Bach case out of Illinois, the Bailey case out of Texas, and the Miller case out of Iowa. In each of those cases, the defendant presented testimony, or the defense attorney elicited something on cross-examination that was directly rebutted by the results of the preliminary breath test. For example, we have a situation where in People v. Bach, the defendant gave an explanation for her behavior, basically saying that the police officers never offered her another sobriety test after she failed the roadside maneuvers. That was directly rebutted by the fact that they had offered her another test, and that was a preliminary breath test. In the Bailey case, defense counsel elicited specific details about the preliminary breath test from the police officer in cross-examination. Similarly, in Miller, the defendant testified that he was physically unable to provide a breath sample, and he had done a preliminary breath test successfully. So those are situations where the specific topic of a preliminary breath test was presented by the defense. And I think in those situations, if this court is going to decide that certain circumstances would open the door to the breath tests, those are the circumstances that would do it. And that is not the circumstance that we have in this case.
Can I follow up? I know you want to save some time. Were the results of the tests in any of those three cases admitted, or just the fact the test was offered
yes,
or completed?
I know at least in the Bach case out of Illinois, the prosecution was allowed to present that the defendant took the test, that it returned a positive result, and did elicit the number from the defendant. And the court, interestingly, I think in their opinion, pointed out that they acknowledged that at least the fact that the defendant took a test was admissible. And they don't really go so far as to say that they were okay with the actual number coming in, but the fact is that they agreed that the defendant opened the door to the topic by denying that there was no test offered.
Right.
But ultimately, that case, the number didn't come in.
All right, thank you.
there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
You may certainly. Thank you. Mr. Mill?
In answer to some of the questions posed by the court, results, that's an interesting term in the statute. It refers to a couple of things, I think. It refers to a number. And in order to get the complete results on this particular test, you get a reading. That was not what was going to happen in this particular case. As a matter of fact, the test itself was never admitted. Merely what was done was the court properly ruled that since the defense opened the door to the fact that in their opening statement and in the testimony and cross-examination of the officers about the presence or absence of breath alcohol on the defendant, insisting that the alcohol came from beer spilled on his shirt, that the court felt that that went directly contrary to evidence of a previous hearing, which indicated at the suppression hearing that the PBT was administered to the defendant, that the defendant initially wasn't fully cooperating with that. The test then proceeded after the officer gave the defendant another chance. It proceeded and got up to a reading of, I believe, 0.075, I think, or thereabouts. And the officer then pushed the button and a partial result was obtained, but it wasn't the full result of the test. But what it did indicate is the presence of breath alcohol on the petitioner and defendant. It indicated that what the defense was saying was incorrect, that there was, that contrary to what they were going to put out in their plan or in their particular theory of the case, was that the defendant did not consume alcohol, wasn't on the spread. This was, the door had been opened, certainly if not in the opening statement, by the time cross-examination had occurred and the officers were grilled, I guess, by defense counsel about where's this alcohol coming from? Trying to, the officers, I believe in the reports, they said from the person, and one officer described in more details that what we're talking about in this particular case is the impurities that come once the alcohol is digested or goes into the system of the individual.
Mr. Mellon, let me just interject for a moment. Even if you're right about the door having been opened, why does that eliminate the need to establish a foundation under 702, even to use this kind of evidence for impeachment purposes? I know that you argue in part that it wasn't preserved, the 702 argument, but as I look at the record, it seems pretty plain to me that there was argument about this alleged scientific unreliability of the PBT device. So I find myself wondering whether the 702 foundation is necessary in order to establish the reliability that you seem to think that the PBT device has to allow this impeachment to be meaningful. So why not 702?
That issue was never reached, and nor do I recall it being actually raised by the defense, and I may be incorrect on that, but the issue, I suppose, is the proposition that the prosecution could offer that evidence. Now, the court didn't state whether that required, whether they were going to be required to establish a full foundation under Rule 702 to bring that in or not. But the bottom line was, I think it was going to be offered for the sole purpose of indicating that it did reflect the presence of alcohol, and that was it. Not a quantified number, not the full results. And so it was, in fact, a qualitative result. Qualitative actually means that, the contrary to what counsel says, means that the
that the chemical analysis is designed to identify the components. It does not give the amount. There's a difference between quantitative analysis and qualitative. Qualitative would merely spell out this is ethyl alcohol that went into the instrument.
Well, irrespective of whether it's qualitative or quantitative, it's a result nonetheless. This goes to the point that Justice Boatwright was asking about earlier. You would acknowledge that that is a qualitative result, positive for ethyl alcohol.
Yes. It is, similar to the statute that council cited, the minor in possession statute. They talk about a qualitative analysis. And as you know, in that particular situation, these tests are administered to persons underage to determine one simple fact: is there alcohol in their breath or not? And that, if that is done by an approved device in the Department of the Health Department, then and comes up with a reading indicating the presence of alcohol, then the juvenile could be found guilty of being in possession of alcohol.
Well, I don't need to hog your time, and I'll stop with this. I think the intoxilizer 9000 that's commonly used, as I understand it, looking at the briefs, their certification calibration requirements, there's documentation of that pursuant to regulations. Do we have any of that for PBT devices?
I think, council talked about, there is the preference, obviously, that they want to use the intoxilizer for that reason. You can calibrate the intoxilizer. You can run a known sample through it to determine if it's operating correctly. This apparently does not happen in this case. An officer doesn't have, as far as I know, a known sample to run through the instrument to indicate that it's working fine and measuring the exact amount of alcohol. What it does do is fairly reliably, in fact, it's admissible to establish probable cause. It's admissible in court in a juvenile in a minor possession case to determine, hey, we have alcohol here on the individual.
That's but isn't that a fairly different standard, though, than admitting it in this context where the standard would be beyond reasonable doubt? I mean, admission of PBT results to prove presence of alcohol for purposes of establishing whether an officer had probable cause to believe that a person had consumed alcohol is one thing. But admitting it in this impeachment context, essentially for purposes of establishing presence of alcohol, one of the part and parcel of one of the elements of this offense that the jury has to wrestle with and find beyond a reasonable doubt, that strikes me as a very different matter. And one that sort of not only requires some sort of basic reliability, but enhanced reliability, at least greater assurances of reliability.
We never got that far in this particular case, but whether a proper foundation would be laid or not, whether whether we could demonstrate the certification of this device to the health department, which has a certification process that for its different kind of instruments, it wasn't indicated yet, at least at that point. Whether particular device was that was used in this particular occasion. Certainly we didn't get a whole result on it. All we got was information which may not, even though maybe not admissible in case in chief, certainly would be admissible because if the police opened that door, which we believe they did through their actions in the case.
Mr. Miller, can I follow up on that? Two questions. One is, so do you think that the fact that there was a positive result on the test is a result, or is it the number? Same question I asked opposing counsel.
I don't think it's the result the statute is calling for. I think the statute calls for the entire...
The number.
The entire number and the indication of the presence.
Okay, if that's the case then, if the test had registered zero, would the defendant be allowed to then introduce that?
Yes, I believe that would that would be exculpatory evidence. I believe one of the cases indicated that very fact. I believe it was a case out of Texas.
But with our statute, it says neither the results would, so if it's 000, then the defendant could introduce that.
Yes, because it would be exculpatory evidence, and due process, I think, would probably trump the statutory requirement in that case, just as I believe the opening the door and the fact that if we're talking about the defense misrepresenting or misleading the jury as to whether or not the defendant actually consumed alcohol or not. And that's what was the issue in this.
Let me go back to your, Mr. Miller, a minute. Let me go back to your emphasis on opening the door. You would agree, I assume, that even if one does open the door, however we take that to mean, that it could then still be impeached or evidence could be introduced against what he said, only if it's reliable or relevant evidence. We presumably agree with that. It wouldn't make sense to say you could impeach somebody with evidence that isn't reliable at all.
That's correct.
Okay, so your opponent seems to be arguing that the statute is a legislative determination that this is unreliable evidence.
I think that it's a legislative enactment that they wanted to use a more precise device for the taking of tests, which was offered to the defendant. That's an intoxilizer or a blood draw to get a more accurate, more precise reading, particularly if you're talking about per se cases where the exact number of the alcohol, blood alcohol content is critical.
And so you think it's reliable, but just not reliable to the extent of showing a number that could be introduced to the jury. That being the case, why is it important that we have an opening the door problem here at all? Why shouldn't that evidence simply be admissible to the extent that it's reliable?
It should be admissible, like I said, for impeachment purposes. Reliability goes to, in this particular case, to show probable cause. And probable cause at the motions hearing, this was presented.
I guess what I'm concerned about is the statute doesn't seem to deal with the problem of impeachment at all. And so if we read the statute to mean it's not, this kind of evidence is not sufficiently reliable to attach a number to it, but it nevertheless is reliable to show the defendant had consumed alcohol, why is, where do we read in this scheme that the legislature intended that it only be allowed to be used to impeach? Why wouldn't we read into this statute then that the legislature intended that it be allowed to be used for this purpose simply because it's relevant for that purpose?
Well, the legislature did say it couldn't be used in open court, and I think the results, and that's in front of a jury, but it didn't. It did indicate that it could be used at a probable cause determination and at a suppression hearing. It could be used in a MIP case.
And you derive from those things that it could be used for, that it could, they must have meant that it could be used for impeachment as well?
I think the impeachment is like we're talking about, another doctrine that comes out, in that this is a piece of evidence that is available, it is reliable to the extent it shows the presence of alcohol. And when somebody's flatly denying that and saying there is no alcohol, and found in the theory of the case, that opening the door allows some sort of option of rebuttal or impeachment of that particular testimony to show that, to confirm the exact opposite. I don't think that it's written into the statute, and certainly, as we know from Harris versus New York, where the Constitution can be violated, and yet the defense is trying to use this particular protection as a shield rather than what it was intended for, to put in misleading or even perjured testimony, that won't be allowed. That's what we were looking at in this particular case.
And the rationale for those constitutional cases, Harris, if I recall, is because that evidence would be kept out for various policy reasons having to do with affecting the behavior of police in the future, even though it's reliable. Yeah. And so it's not a question of admitting something that's a questionable reliability. Is that right?
That's right. I think certainly in this particular case, the PBT is reliable, certainly for the purpose of establishing probable cause, not as reliable, obviously, as the certified intoxilizer, but certainly performs its own function in just providing that initial probable cause determination in defining the presence of alcohol in a person's breath.
And I guess just to follow up on Justice Cook's question, the cases where we're talking about admitting otherwise inadmissible Miranda statements or things like that, none of those cases, at least that I could find, involved an express statutory prohibition on the admission of whatever the evidence concerned. Are you aware of another example when there's an express statutory prohibition on a certain type of evidence, and yet that was overlooked where it's otherwise admitted in the context of impeachment because the defendant opened the door?
I think the other cases we talked about, Bach and Okopsky, there aren't a lot of cases out there where they were relying on the same or a similar statutory structure and were allowed when the situation arose in trial where the defense was making a false allegation regarding the taking of a test or what happened with the test or intoxication, that they were allowed to the door was open, they were allowed to do that. Certainly, like I said, if the constitutional provision of the Fifth Amendment can lend itself to that kind of analysis, to be using for impeachment purposes a statutory provision in the search for the truth should be impossible in a case like this.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Ms. Fritzberg, about a minute left.
Try to use it wisely. I want to start by responding to the conversation that Justice Coates started. I think the question was about if the court is going to find that these results are admissible for impeachment purposes, why not just take the extra step and find that these results are admissible for any purpose? I think that goes to the heart of the admissibility framework that I was discussing at the beginning, which is that there is no amount of testimony, there is no evidence that can be presented that would alleviate the concerns that we have about the reliability of this evidence. This is not a situation where, you know, the police come into an apartment and find drugs, and no one argues that those drugs are drugs, but there's something wrong with the search, and so we keep that evidence out, at least initially. These results are not reliable.
Well, let me just interject and ask you the same question that I asked Mr. Mellon, essentially. Why doesn't a 702 foundation establish the reliability that would be necessary to use it for impeachment purposes?
And I think that actually goes to what Justice Marquez was asking as well, which is that I don't think we have to go that far, because we're in the unique situation where the legislature has made it an express prohibition.
Assume for the moment that we're interested in potentially going that far. Help me work through the 702 analysis.
I don't disagree that if there was some scenario where the prosecution intended to use this evidence, it would also then be their burden to meet the other standards of admissibility that we have laid out in the rules of evidence.
All right. Sir, I'm sorry, you're putting this up.
Thank you.
So thank you, Mr. Christopher, for your comments, and thank you, Mr. Miller, for yours as well. The court is in recess.